the head trash, as humans, we tend to push it down. We tend to be like, I'm fine. I'm okay. This is fine. No worries. And we keep pushing it down. And the only time it sneaks out is when we're trying to sleep and it wakes you up and you worry and you dread and you have all this stuff. The challenge with it is our brain kind of has these two pieces. You've got your emotional subconscious brain and then your logical conscious brain. And if you're ignoring your subconscious brain and everything it has going on, it's going to wake you up.
Welcome to the More Clients, Less Effort podcast, where we provide expert insights and strategies to turbocharge your business growth. I'm your host, Tim Hyde. And in this series, we'll unpack the secrets, proven systems, and the sales and marketing strategies used by successful business owners to attract, convert, and keep A-class clients on autopilot. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur looking to scale your customer acquisition or a budding startup owner looking to crack the code on attracting the right clients, you've come to the right place. Join us on this journey to building a thriving business that leaves a lasting impact. Now let's get started. Hello and welcome back to another episode of More Clients, Less Effort. I'm super excited to do a slightly different episode today. We're going to talk to Dr. Robin Odegaard. Robin is affectionately known as the Mental MacGyver and has 15 years experience as a high-performance business psychologist and professional confidant to founders and executives from startup to exit. She's a former competitive beach volleyball player and did a graduate work in business psychology with a concentration in high performance. She's given a TEDx talk, authored, co-authored, and contributed to 7 books, and created a 5-point paradigm for creating success out of chaos, specifically to help her clients reach and maintain cutting-edge performance. And as I'm reading this, I'm going, this is like, you know, Wendy from, Billions.
Billions. You're exactly right.
There we go. She adores the intellectual stimulation of a good conversation. And in her spare time, she reads astrophysics for fun, hikes, tends her garden, and way too many houseplants, and trains her dog Nebula to do circus tricks. Robin, it's my absolute pleasure to have you, the real life Wendy Rhodes.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
No, it's fantastic. We met recently, and one of the things that you were talking about, you know, in that networking room that we were on, was this idea of really sort of getting the fundamentals of your thinking right in order to create the performance outcomes. And having just read James Clear's Atomic Habits, which we spoke about briefly off air, you know, one of the things that he talks about that I know is really fundamental to the work you do is actually changing the paradigm about the belief we have, which then works as a core belief to creating the goals we want. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that work.
Yeah. So a lot of the things I do with my clients, the first question I always ask a client is, what do you want to be different? Because if you start asking them, what are your dreams? What are your goals? You get all this pie in the sky stuff. And I'm really interested in what's not working currently. Yeah. And you get a much better answer when you start asking, what do you want to be different? And sometimes there are things where we have to go back and find out what happened that caused them to start making these kind of choices. You know, things are not your fault, but are your problem kind of situations. So we find that out before we can move forward. The other thing that I teach my clients is that you have kind of two kinds of fear. You have trauma-based fear, which is the kind you have to bust through. Success is on the other side of it. Don't let fear stop you. But you also have intuition-based fear, which is your gut going, that is a horrible idea. Do not do that. And oftentimes we mix them up to our peril, and it's really hard to tell them apart when you're in the throes of it. I know I've mixed them up myself in the past in my business.
Yeah. One thing one of my early mentors said in project management was like, in the fullness of time, all decisions that you make will turn out to be wrong. Right. So just make them and then give yourself more time to adjust if necessary.
You know, they talk about decisions that are reversible and decisions that aren't reversible. And if it's a decision that you can make and then back out of easily, make it, see what happens, and then back out of it if it doesn't work. If it's a decision you can't back out of, then you need to think about it a little more carefully.
Okay. Take me back. Right. I know that you grew up in a cult, which is really just a religion that hasn't reached critical mass yet. tell me more about that and how that really has formed the person that you are today.
Yeah. So my TEDx talk that I did talks about the imposter syndrome that I had that was based around this idea that, you know, I was just a girl. I was basically average. I needed a man that was going to be able to feed and clothe me. And so even though I graduated valedictorian from high school, 3 weeks later, my dad married me off to one of my first cousins, who was 11 years my senior. And then he promptly moved me from California, where I grew up, out to North Carolina. There were several things, though, that were very much silver linings about that. One, because he moved me away, there wasn't that critical mass of people who were able to maintain the grooming of, you're just a girl and you shouldn't do this. My new husband was not very bright. He was very badly in debt and he had a drug problem. So the fact that he wasn't very bright meant he couldn't maintain that grooming himself. There was no way he was going to be able to do it. I was just so much smarter than he was. And when I was 18 and he was 29, we were kind of sort of compatible, but he was done maturing and I was just starting. And the fact that he was badly in debt means he had to have me get a job. He needed me to be making money, which means I ended up in the workforce. I started making money. I started having experiences with the outside world. I started learning and growing. And because he had a drug problem, if you fast forward 8.5 years, I learned this later. I didn't realize it at the time, but he told me, I don't love you. I don't want to be married to you. And I don't want you living in my house. And my father called and gave me the riot act and told me, if you had been appropriately submissive, you would have been able to make it work. And there's this whole big shame and guilt and all this stuff. Yep. What actually happened is the cartel that my husband had gotten involved with wanted to steal his identity because he had very good credit. Thank you, Robin. But they knew that I did our family finances so I would see what they were doing. So they needed me out of the way. And they convinced him that I was holding him back and he would be better off without me. So if I ever write that book, it's going to be called I'd Like to Thank the Cartel.
I think that's an interesting thing if you sort of, we look at, I guess, partners, and not just in life, but in business as well. If we're not on the same wavelength, very quickly you kind of are exposed to ideas and scenarios that kind of reinforce to you that, hang on, this is a little bit different. What am I discovering about myself here? So with that competitive drive for you, and valedictorian at high school, getting into the workforce for the first time as a young woman, what a dysfunctional relationship, clearly, and forced into that. You know, what was it about either the workforce or that you were learning about yourself that kind of led to this competitive drive that you have now?
Well, the competitive drive, some of it comes just from the Protestant work ethic that was beat into me literally as a child. Like if you're going to do something, you do it really, 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 really well. And what I found in the corporate space is that actually worked against me because I became so good at the work that I did that managers wouldn't promote me because they'd have to hire 2.5 people to replace me. So I'd end up stuck in jobs because they wouldn't let me move on.
Don't be so good at your job that you can't be promoted.
Right. And what ended up happening is because I had this belief that, you were given a job, congratulations, don't ever give it up. You probably will never get another one. I took jobs for less money than I should have. I didn't advocate for myself and I stayed way longer than I should have. But I learned a lot of interesting things about how not to manage people in that process. So that's good, I guess. But when I got out of that first marriage, that's when I got to go and play some competitive beach volleyball and start to figure out, I was in my mid-20s at that point, who am I as a grown-up? I'd never dated. I had no idea how to interact with men. It was ridiculous how bad it was. And that's part of the reason I ended up in my second marriage, where totally my own fault. I have to take complete responsibility for the second one. I met a very narcissistic man who love bombed me and spent a lot of money on me. And people used to say things like, oh, he must really love you. He buys you, fancy clothes and diamonds and whatever. And now I know the ability to spend money on someone has nothing to do with love. But I believed that. And I ended up married to him. And he moved me from Charlotte up to Long Island and then took a job promptly in London, England, and left me on Long Island to maintain his tax status. And I couldn't get a job. Because I was just a pretty girl with a high school diploma. I couldn't get interviews. No one would talk to me. And he said to me, very condescendingly, but I will say thank you anyway, we don't need your silly money anyway. Why don't you just go to college? And that's why at 32, I had the opportunity to take the money I had made from selling the house I had in Charlotte and go to college. And I got 3 degrees in 6.5 years while he lived in London and I managed his life here in the States.
What was that like for you? Because I think if you've come out of, because our sort of family life and upbringing, forms so much of our beliefs, right? That we just fall into these patterns of behavior, which can be very difficult to break, right? You've come out of one that's like completely devoid of any affection. You get love bombed in quite a narcissistic kind of way, but you don't notice narcissism when it happened to you. You only notice it laughed when someone says, hey, that's not probably right. And you're going, oh my God, I've never had so much attention in my life, which then gets taken away from you. And again, how do you kind of find yourself in all of that?
For me, it was at the time, if I were to look back at it, it was just do whatever the next thing is. And I remember him saying to me, I just need you to be available to be, basically, he didn't say it this way, but executive arm candy. Be able to come to Europe, host wine tastings, host dinner parties, be available to be the executive wife, and you can do whatever you want. And so for me at the time, it was just about balancing. Going to school was very easy because it gives you a very structured, you do this assignment, you do this assignment, you just you get an A. You do. So that was easy. Just do those things and that's easy. Managing him and the chaos, and there were constantly, because he was bisexual and not monogamous at all, there was constantly these incoming things of he's sleeping with this woman and she's emailing me these nasty messages. And I call his hotel room and some guy answers and I'm like, I'm sorry, who are you? And then, oh, you've got the wrong number, click. And I hang up, I call back and nobody answers. And I'm like, ugh. So that mental challenge was much harder than just running my life.
Talk to me about what you, okay, we get into, you know, you've got this sort of interest in performance. You go and study it, right?
I do.
Clearly develop a fascination for it.
Yeah.
And think, I'm going to do my own thing, right? I clearly can't rely on them in my life because they're useless.
I'm married to a really good guy now. I have to say that. Okay. The guy I'm married to
Russ,
now is really great.
Big shout out to Russ. Okay.
Big shout out to Russ. He's a good guy.
We finally found a good one. We had a couple of false starts and we found a good guy now.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do you learn about, I guess, from your life that now applies into business in terms of performance?
So the thing when I really decided to study performance was going back to my time on the volleyball court and realizing that there were days I could get on the court and I could kill it. I could play that game. I could do no wrong. I could hit the lines. My serves were in. It was awesome. And then there were other days I would get on the court and it was like, where did my game go? Like, have I ever touched a volleyball in my life? What happened?
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to understand that human condition of peaks of I'm amazing, I can do no wrong, and valleys of I've completely fallen apart. And so understanding that, how to not crash under pressure and what does that look like and maintaining that even keel in the highs and lows of high performance was really interesting to me. So when I was in grad school, half of my work was in sports psychology and half of my work was in organizational and business psychology, including my internship was kind of this half and half. And what I noticed is that high performance is the same, whether you're using your brawn or your brain, how you engage in it is exactly the same. And managing the demons, the head trash, is the same.
Yeah. Tell me about the head trash. Because I was watching in Australia, because I was watching the Wallabies, right? I'm a big rugby union fan. And the Wallabies, for the first time ever last year, did not make a Rugby World Cup quarterfinal. And they crashed out in spectacular fashion. Coach, for better or worse, has now moved on to Japan. I've just seen one of the stations here has released a documentary, a behind-the-scenes documentary, and they follow quite a few of the players and the coach and all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. And one of the guys, Taniela Tupou, who's an incredible, you know, forward prop, right? So, you know, he's had this really, really bad run of injury. Very much a lauded player, one of the best in the world in his position, but can never get on the field because he's injured quite regularly. And during the course of the thing, he's just gotten back from 12 months out of the sport, gets in, having a run, like second game in, which I've experienced recently, having just busted my ankle after 2 days back at, but you know, second game back at basketball after a hand surgery, falls, you know, injures himself out of the rest of the World Cup and so on. And how do people deal with that, not just in a sports context, but particularly business context? Because we can get so many highs and so many lows, and these things that we invest our time in, particularly business, take everything we've got and then still come back and ask for more.
And it becomes part of your identity.
Yeah.
If your identity is, I'm a rugby player, if that's taken away from you, you're suddenly very free floating in the sea of life going, I don't know who I am if I'm not a rugby player. And I see that with business owners as well. Even if they exit successfully, like they sell their business and they have all this money. And I had a client say to me not too long ago, Robin, I have all of this money and I don't think my wife likes me. My kids don't like me. And I'm not sure I even like me. And so the thing is, when you're going through this and the head trash, as humans, we tend to push it down. We tend to be like, I'm fine. I'm okay. This is fine. No worries. And we keep pushing it down. And the only time it sneaks out is when we're trying to sleep and it wakes you up and you worry and you dread and you have all this stuff. The challenge with it is our brain kind of has these two pieces. You've got your emotional subconscious brain and then your logical conscious brain. And if you're ignoring your subconscious brain and everything it has going on, it's going to wake you up. It's going to bother you. It's going to spiral out of control. And your logical conscious brain is like, I don't understand what's wrong. I just know I'm not okay. And if you can't find a way, and the things I suggest are this: create some silence in your life, whether that means driving without the radio on or exercising without a podcast going, or, you know, brushing your teeth without the TV on, or what, create a space where you're not taking in so much information and see what comes up for you. And at first it's going to be scary because your subconscious brain is just going to go at you.
It's like all the thoughts.
All the thoughts. And you're like, I have no idea. And most people can't deal with that. So they silence it by adding input, by doing things that create input so they don't have to listen.
Well, it's so easy to pick up, you know, just to, you know, see it all the time. First thing in the morning, last thing at night, you're on your phone watching TikTok reels. You know,
right. It's constant input, constant. There's never silence. And there are studies that say silence while walking at all is good. Walking in nature is even better.
Yeah.
Giving your brain that space is really important. And that's how you deal with the head trash. And I'm going to tell you the gold standard is find someone business savvy that you trust, who you can talk to, who is capable of being both empathetic and asking you the really tough questions. That's going to be your gold standard for solving this. But, and you know this, I'm not telling any secrets, the coaching and therapy world, very deep pool full of very shallow people. It is hard to find a good confidant and coach.
Tell me more about that, right? Because I think that's the same, like certainly in marketing, you can hang a shingle and be a marketer, right?
That's how coaching is. Let me take a weekend course and look, now I'm qualified. And what I see, I had a young woman in her early 20s who came to me, was asking me all kinds of questions, kind of picking my brain. And then at the end said to me, I think I would be a great life coach for you. And I was like, Sweetie, oh my goodness. Like, how do I say to you, that's ridiculous without smacking you upside the head, you know? And so what I tell people is when you're looking for that person, if you're looking for a coach or a therapist or a confidant or whatever it is, don't give up when it's hard to find a good one that you mesh with. It's taken me forever to find someone that I can talk to who I trust. And for me, my clients say to me all the time, I've never said this out loud to anyone. And if you have things in your brain that you've never said out loud to anyone, that's the head trash that's going to come and torment you at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Is it easy to let go? I've always felt that as an entrepreneur, you know, we get so many knocks, right? So we have to wear this armor of resilience.
Yes.
Right? To be able to cope on a day-to-day basis, right? Mm-hmm. You know, someone's going to cancel their contract with you a day before you've got payroll due, or, you know, you think something's going to come off and it doesn't come off. And, you know, we have a lot of knocks, right? But at the same time, we have to also be incredibly vulnerable to learn and be adaptive to the changes we have to face. Mm-hmm. How do we reconcile this?
It's not easy. It's absolutely not easy. And what I see, so most of my clients are men, not exclusively, but a lot of my clients are men. And what I see is that they end up with bros, like people they drink with and people they golf with, not people they actually share their feelings with. And so they have this facade of, I'm this tough entrepreneur. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. It's all good. I've got everything under control. I'm taking care of everybody.
I just bought a new Maserati just so I could pretend I'm actually more successful than I really am.
Right. It's all. And they talk to their friends and their friends are like, how are you? They're like, I'm great. This amazing thing happened. You know, sometimes they say obnoxious things about girls on their yachts, whatever it is. They've got this bravado going on and they never reconcile that I'm not okay. I am not happy. This is not working. And I have no one to talk to about it.
Mm. Do you think that's like affects men more than women?
So what I see is what I just described is very male dominated. On the female side for entrepreneurs, what I find is that female entrepreneurs and female high performers, they have friends and they can certainly talk to their friends about personal issues and things that men would never talk to their friends about, right? Their spouses or whatever. But if a female business person tries to talk to her friends about business struggles, a lot of times she's going to get glazed over eyes of, I have no idea what that means. Or they might say, oh, that sounds really tough, but they don't have the background to be able to give them good advice. They can't help them with that. And so that's the kind of the difference is, yet women personally have people to talk to. They may not get good advice professionally. It's just like men. They don't have someone to talk to.
Yeah, there's a lot of confirmational bias when you talk to your friends. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, we need someone who can actually say, cut the crap.
Yep. I have one client who said to me once, Robin, I feel like I pay you to be my best friend, but you're so good at it, I can't even be mad.
I love it. Let's pivot. Let's talk about your business and we'll go behind the scenes of your business a bit. And I know you've got an incredible system, which you can go and find over at drrobinodegaard.com in terms of your 5-point plan. And I actually love your website because, you know, it really gets into who you are. And I think when you're dealing with anyone who's going to get inside your head in the way that you do, you kind of want to go, I feel safe with you. This is good. But you've got another business with your husband, Russ, as well. But, you know, which is Whole Food Muscle. You can go and check that out on Robin's website as well. Some links there. But talk to me about a system in your business, how you work with your clients and how you systemize, I guess, the attraction, conversion, and retention of those clients.
Yeah. So for me, the interesting thing about my business is that ideally, my business would come from referrals. But my clients are so private, they won't tell anybody I exist.
Well, it's hard to admit vulnerability, right? And say, you should go and see my therapist.
Like, right. So clients are not like, I have this amazing business coach. Yeah, that's not how I get clients. The way that I get clients is kind of twofold. One, I'm out there quite a bit. I have a lot of social media presence. I give talks. I just 2 days ago gave a talk called Take Out the Head Trash, How to Fight the Demons Keeping You Awake at 3 a.m. for an entrepreneur pitch group, 125 people. So I do a lot of that kind of share my knowledge kind of thing. But I also network and find people who interact and support the clients that I work with. So there's one guy, he does high-end art for very wealthy people for their homes. Anytime someone says, I feel like I need a psychology degree to do my job, I'm like, hello, refer them over here. You don't need to be doing that. Send them this way. So anybody who does that, whether it's lawyers, financial advisors, business brokers who are helping people sell businesses, anyone who does anything like that, I make sure that they kind of have my one pager and can send it out. The one thing I always jokingly say is, don't ever tell somebody you need a shrink. I know a good one. No, that's not nice.
Yeah, you need help, seriously. Well, it is a very difficult conversation. The people we know who are vulnerable, you know, it's very hard to tell someone, have you thought about, you know, getting some help from somebody? And it is a very personal journey for people to kind of arrive at that place at one time. How do you systemize that, right? So we've got these events you go to. What's your process to kind of onboard a client that you make it and go, I know that if I do this thing, this is the result I get?
So I know if I talk to someone who's a good fit for me, right? Let's just assume that we've gone through the process. They're a good fit. They can afford me. They want to work with someone. I know that if I just talk to them, if I spend an hour with them and just basically have a hello conversation, who are you? What's going on with you? What's happening? There is something about my energy that is a really good connection point. And if they're ready, they're in. So it's for me, the bigger challenge is getting in front of the right people. But once I'm in front of the right people, the actual close process isn't a close process. It's a conversation. And then they're like, okay, how do I pay you?
Yeah. I think that's a really important thing when we're looking at sales. And I've seen plenty of people sort of literally read stuff off script, you know, and say, well, if, and you get to this awkward point where it says, I'm just going to be silent for a little while, you know, because that's what the script says. And you go, oh, but if you sign up for today, it will be $2,000, not $5,000. I'm like, hang on, this is supposed to, I mean, the whole idea of marketing, I think, is to, you know, get people who have a problem, want it solved and like you enough to want to solve it, get them into a room with you, right, whether it be virtual or in person. And then you can just have a conversation about whether you're a good fit or not.
And that's exactly what I do. And then I just say, look, these are the two options of working with me. This is the one that most CEOs, founders use. If you're not quite that far along in your business, this one might be a better fit for you. And if neither one of those is a good fit, I do have something called the foresting project that I do with people that kind of just helps them look at all of the forest is their life and how complicated it is. And we kind of get each tree on an index card and kind of look at it. And we can do that in about a half a day. And then I can send them the index cards. It's a good foundational. It's not the ongoing support that most people are looking for when they come to someone like me.
It's very difficult to identify problems when you look at the whole forest. It's much easier when you know the trees, right?
Right. How do you tell what needs to be pruned and what needs to be fertilized and what needs to be removed? Or maybe you should plant a new tree. Yeah. So I really help them break that down. I have a process I use to do that. Yeah.
I think I want to get back to just a statement you said right at the start of our call together.
Okay.
It's like, you know, who do you believe you need to be? I think it was something like that. I can't recall exactly how you phrased it, but it's not like, what are your goals? It's what do you believe is wrong?
Yeah. What do you want to be different?
What do you want to be different? Okay. And I think that's a really powerful question to throw into any sales conversation. Right. So if you don't have that, what do you want to be different about from where you are now to where you want to go? Okay. Well, let's unpack that together. That's
right. Awesome. Exactly.
As always, Robin, we like to finish the podcast off with a quick fire.
So all right.
A bunch
See
of questions.
If I can be ready.
Right. All right. Now we're going to high performance mode. The clock is ticking. All right. What's your biggest failure and what did you learn from that experience?
Biggest business failure. I spent $20,000 on marketing with a guy who was a complete charlatan, took my money and ran basically. What I learned from that is going back to the two types of fear you can have. I was so busy overcoming my trauma-based fear around money because I grew up pretty poor that I didn't listen to my intuition. When I asked him, so he was a marketer. And when I asked him, why do people stop working with you? He said to me, because they run out of money. And for some reason, my brain was like, oh, okay. If I had been paying attention to my intuition-based fear at that point, my intuition would have gone, hold on a minute. A marketer is supposed to A, make enough money to pay for themselves, and B, make more than that so that you can continue in business. If people are stopping working with him because they ran out of money, he's not a very good marketer. But unfortunately, I did not hear that intuition-based fear, and I wasted 3 months and $20,000.
Well, there we go. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. You know, if you're there should be no marketing budget. Like, set an initial amount, but your marketing budget should pay itself back.
Right. That's the whole point of marketing.
That's the whole point of marketing. What does your morning routine look like?
My morning routine looks like we don't have an alarm. I don't have a morning alarm. I have a bedtime alarm to make sure I go to bed on time because a good morning starts the night before.
Yeah.
So I have an alarm that goes off every night to get me to make sure I start my bed prep and get to bed. And then I usually wake up on my own 5:30, 6 o'clock, something like that. Depending upon whether my husband's awake at that point or not, we may get up. I may read the news and just wait for him to get up. The dog may get us up. That, you know, Nebula sometimes is like, hey, somebody let me outside. So we get out of bed and then we get up. I do my morning stuff. I work out usually for half hour to an hour, depending upon the day. Sometimes I lift. We have a COVID gym in our basement. Sometimes I do some cardio.
Yeah, I think a lot of people
take
COVID
the dog
gyms.
For a walk. Yeah, exactly. There are days I do try to schedule at least one, sometimes 2 days a week where I don't book anything in the morning. So my husband and I can go hiking. So we sometimes do that in the mornings.
Yep.
If I am working, I usually start, my first call is usually around 10 o'clock in the morning is when my first call starts.
Yeah. What's a common myth about, I guess, performance coaching, high performance coaching that you passionately disagree with?
I disagree with people who are good at it being good coaches. And here's what I mean by this. Okay. You're an athlete, you get this. If someone is a really, really good athlete and it just comes to them really naturally, they're going to be a horrific coach because they're going to say, I don't know, you just do it. They have no idea about the fundamentals. They don't know how it works. And so there's a couple of books out there that I can recommend. Fooled by Randomness, Thinking in Bets, and The Drunkard's Walk. And they all talk about how we look at people who've succeeded and are like, sensei, show me the way. Everybody's way is different. And just because they got there, this is the analogy I use. Just because they were able to get across the ocean doesn't mean there's stepping stones there. Maybe they happened on a turtle or a ship that was passing by, or, you know, they caught a ride on a whale. If you go the same route, you're going to end up in the bottom of the ocean because that turtle's not there for you to step on. So this idea that really successful people somehow have some magic pill they can give you, that's not how success works. And they don't make great coaches.
Yeah, I recall an interview with another sportsman years ago, whose name now escapes me. But the lesson he said was really fundamental. He's gone, I've never been the best at what I do. I just worked harder than everybody else. Right? And it's really interesting how some of the most naturally gifted sports people are not necessarily the ones who succeed.
Yeah,
because they just don't have the same motivation and drive.
They don't. Absolutely. And I do agree that working hard is absolutely fundamental to being successful. But that statement is gaslighting yourself. I'm not that good. I just work hard. No, you're good because you work hard. It's not.
That's right.
Don't put yourself down. Don't gaslight yourself.
Yeah. What's a lesson that your job has taught you think everyone should learn at some point in their life?
Oh, the difference between being resilient and being stubborn. I cross that line more often than I care to admit.
Explain that to me.
So the best advice I've ever gotten in my life, I was actually offended when it was said to me. Robin, you are resilient. Stop making decisions that make you prove it.
Ooh.
This idea of if I don't do it the hard way, it doesn't count. I should continue doing it even though it's not working because it's going to work. I just have to work harder at it. No, sometimes you need to pivot. Stop being stubborn. Take the message and pivot. So the challenge is, how do you figure out when you need to continue to be resilient and work through and deal with the challenges? And how do you notice when, no, I'm being stubborn and banging my head against the wall. I need to pivot and look for the door.
Mm, so true. So true. Last one. And I didn't warn you this one in advance.
Oh, no, no warning.
If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would that be?
You are smart, you are capable, and you don't need someone else to put a roof over your head.
Yeah, that's awesome. Robin, really appreciate you joining us and sharing your expertise. So many absolutely massive takeaways from that for me, and I'm sure for many of our listeners as well. You're coming back to really just understanding who you are and who your motivations, and everything else comes from that. Guys, thanks again for joining us on today's episode of More Clients, Less Effort. You can find out more about Robin in the show notes. You can also head over to thementalmacgyver.com or drrobinodegaard.com. The links will be for those in the show notes as well. Robin, really appreciate you joining us today and sharing your expertise.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Take care, guys, and we'll catch you on another episode real soon.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of More Clients, Less Effort. Join us next time for another insightful discussion filled with actionable advice and inspiring stories, all geared towards helping you grow and scale your business simply and easily. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app so you never miss an episode. See you next time.